श्रवणौ कथायां हस्तौ च कर्मसु मनस्तव पादयोर्नः स्मृत्यां शिरस्तवरिवास जगत्प्रणामे दृष्टिः सतां दर्शनेस्तु भवत्तनूनाम् ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. O Divine Lord, we pray that all our speech be devoted to the narration of the excellence and enchanting of the glories. May our ears be devoted to hearing thy wonderful glories. May our hands be engaged in the performance of all work as your worship, and our minds be engaged in meditation on thy holy feet. May we bow down to your feet with our heads, and may all our eyes be able to perceive your presence, tangible presence in all the forms at all times. Om peace. Peace be within us all. Peace and harmony be amongst all beings. And peace be everywhere in the whole of nature. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Good morning and welcome. You're all here bright and early. Daylight saving time. We have been studying the teachings of Sri Rama, which he gave to Shabari, a humble devotee, an unlettered lady, advanced in years, who spent all her life in a hermitage serving the holy people who were engaged in austerities, spiritual practices. When one by one the sages living in that monastery, in the forest hermitage, left their bodies and reached their goal, this lady was left alone and the last person to leave the hermitage. He told her to wait there patiently, not to go anywhere else, until one day Lord Sri Rama will appear and give her his blessings. So she patiently waited for a long time, counting days, hoping that every day will be the day when Sri Rama will come and bestow his grace, his blessings. Finally, the day came. Sri Rama came there, accompanied by his brother Lakshmana. Both were roaming in the forest from place to place looking for Sita, Sri Rama's wife, who had been abducted by the demon Ravana, that we know from the Ramayana story. So when Sri Rama came to the hermitage where Shabari was waiting for him, she received him with utmost devotion, with her eyes filled with tears of joy and devotion. Finally, the Lord has come to bless her and bestow his grace upon her. That blessed day has come. She was full of joy, full of devotion. And she worships, washes his feet, welcomes him in her own humble way. And then Sri Ramachandra gives her instructions, asks her, Sri Ramachandra asks her what she wants to have by way of a boon, but she doesn't ask anything. She could have asked for anything, for liberation, salvation, but she didn't say anything. So Sri Rama chose to give her instructions on how to achieve pure devotion to God. We all have devotion without exception. If not to God, to something else. We are all devoted. We are all devotees in the general sense. People who are devoted to their pursuits, whether it be scientific research or political activity or whatever, they are devoted to something in their lives. Their own well-being or making money, we are all devoted. In some sense, we have devotion. But devotion to God, the divine, residing within us all. That is the highest kind of devotion. And in that devotion to God also, there is great variety, gradation. Well, we all have devotion to some extent. The highest kind of devotion is something which is very rare. Sri Ramakrishna in his teachings always refer to pure devotion, raga bhakti or prema, as opposed to vaidhi bhakti or ordinary devotion. Ordinary devotion means we go to the temple or place of worship every now and then, when convenient, we chant some hymns, we do some worship, we read some scriptures and we do some repetition of God's name, japa, and there we think we have done our spiritual practice. But deeper than that, when this kind of practice of ordinary devotion is carried on for some time, it becomes deeper and free from motivation. We are ordinarily, we have some motive in our mind. When we worship God, we want something from God. In the Gita, Sri Krishna says, people worship me. The Lord says, the people worship me with various desires in their mind. Four kinds of worship, people worship me, he says in the 7th chapter. Chaturvidha janaha mam bhajante. What are they? Artham. Most of the time we go to God when we need something from God, when we are in trouble, we have some kind of a problem in our lives, then we go to God and pray for redressal, for relief from that problem. Artham. It can be any kind of problem. When people are sick, we pray to God more diligently than when you are well, doing well. So, artham means a person praying to God for relief from some problem which is afflicting that person at that time. Jignasu, second kind of person who is seeking knowledge of God. The second kind of devotee is not interested in worldly pursuits, in success or wealth or money or anything, but he wants devotion to God, he wants knowledge to know God, to know the real nature of God. That person is a nobler ideal than seeking something purely from a selfish point of view. The third kind of person is artharthi. Artharthi, is, artha can, in a very specific sense, means money, wealth. In a general sense, artha means any objective that we want to pursue, success in some pursuit. Somebody wants something that one does not have at the moment. A praise to God for that missing thing, with the hope that if that thing is supplied, life will be happier, better and fuller. That is the contention, belief of the artharthi, person who prays to God, seeking something which is absent from one's life at the moment. It may be a job seeker prays to God. There is a temple somewhere, I think it's in Andhra Pradesh, which you have heard about, I'm sure. It's called the Visa Temple. You heard about it? It's in the news. People who want to come to the United States from India or go to some other country in pursuit of higher education or career job, they have to get visa from the country. And these days it is very difficult to get visa. Everybody wants to come to the United States because it's the happiest place in the world, most successful, prosperous place. Well, that's why most of us are here. We came seeking to fulfill the American dream. So the visa is a big problem. So they go to that particular temple with their passports and other documents. It's in the news. I'm not making it up. It is happening in India. There is a visa temple. And you can see all the people lined up to offer their worship with their documents in hand, praying to God for visa to go to the United States. So that's an artharthi. Artharthi is a person who is seeking something which he or she does not have at the moment, with the hope that if that thing is supplied, life will be happier, happiness will come. The third kind of person, artha, a person in distress, jignasu, a person seeking knowledge of God, artharthi, seeking something else which it doesn't have, money or something else. And the fourth kind of person, four kinds of people worship me, the Lord said, jnani, a person who does not seek anything from God. He or she simply worships God because of pure devotion. There's no seeking. That devotion is not prompted by any desire or by motivated by any fear. People out of fear also worship God. If I don't do this worship, something will happen. There's no fear motivating that person to worship God. There's no desire seeking something from God, expressing devotion for the sake of love. Love for the sake of love, purest kind of love for God. Now, Sri Rama's instruction was, to Shabari was, how to seek that pure devotion to God which does not have any motive behind it. No desire, no fear. Whatever the Lord gives, that I accept. I obey His will. I accept what He gives. There is no seeking in my mind. Even if there is some need, I'm not going to ask God to give me that. He knows my needs better than I know my needs. Whatever He gives, with that I'm happy. With that contentment, describing the qualities of a person who has pure devotion to God, one of the qualities Sri Krishna says in the 12th chapter is santushto yena kena chit. Whatever is there, without complaining, accepting it joyfully and remaining happy with it. No seeking and no fear. Such devotion, which is pure love, purest kind of devotion, just for love of God, that is the kind of devotion that Sri Ramakrishna and other teachers of devotion have asked us to cultivate. We have devotion, but generally our devotion is a condition prompted by some desire. I want something, though, therefore I pray to God. That wanting something should be eliminated gradually. I love God because I love God. God is lovable. That is it. How to cultivate that kind of pure devotion to God? Sri Rama explained several steps, 9 steps to Shabari. If you do 9 things, or some of the 9 things that Sri Rama is explaining to Shabari, that will lead us to gain, that will help us to gain pure devotion to God. So far we have studied 5 such instructions, 5 steps, Sri Rama's instructions. First is holy company. Satam sangatirevatra prathamam sadaram smritam. Holy company. Sri Ramakrishna also often emphasized the importance of holy company. It has many advantages. It helps us to gain, among other things, pure devotion to God. Takes away all the impurities from our mind, such as lust, anger, greed, pride, etc. Helps us to gain pure devotion to God. Holy company. Second is spiritual talk. We always like to talk people, whether it is necessary or not. We keep saying something relevant or not. We keep saying something that all talk should cease except talk about God. If we talk, let us talk about God. It purifies the mind, gives us devotion. Rather than engaging in worldly talk always, celebrity gossip, sports, trivia, and all those things, politics and who is doing what, all those things. Let us talk about God if you want to talk about something. Talking about God, conversation among devotees about God, spiritual practices, purifies the mind, uplifts the mind, helps us to gain pure devotion to God. Spiritual talk. Third step is devotional singing and chanting. We have studied the importance of devotional chanting of various hymns. You can find hymns in various sources. You can find hymns in the Vedas, such as the Purusha Sukta, Narayana Sukta, sometimes which we chant during our special worships. Rudram, Chamakam, all those things. Many hymns are there in the Vedas. Many more hymns are there in the Puranas, mythological scriptures. Vishnu Sahasranama is a very important example of such a hymn. It also, we find hymns in the epics, Mahabharata, Ramayana. Most famous among the hymns that occur in the Mahabharata is the list of 1,000 names of Lord Vishnu taught by Bhishma to Dharmaraja. That is the one that is most often chanted in different parts of India. 1,000 names. There are 108 names and like that. Chanting names of God and devotional singing, they all purify the mind. Help us to gain pure devotion to God. That was the third step. Fourth step was study of the teachings of the Lord. God's teachings come to us through infinite sources, infinite channels. Our teachers, down the ages, over many centuries and millennia, many sages have given, have shared their insight, their teachings with the posterity without seeking anything in return. We can study the teaching of any saint of our choice from any faith. They all say the same thing in general. Details may be different. Study of the teachings of the Lord from many sources, even non-human beings also are teaching us devotion to God and other virtues such as equanimity, etc. Some time ago, we had an opportunity to talk about how teachings are being given to us from all across nature. In all these things in nature, they are teaching us the highest principles of Vedanta. There were 24 teachers of the Avadhuta. There was a great sage, Avadhuta, a man of highest realization. He got all his teachings not from any human being, human teacher, from the whole of nature. The tree, for example. We see so many trees every day in our backyard when we go someplace. So many trees are there all around. We just read this another tree. We just see the tree. Nothing, no impact is made. But it is telling us something. If we have the ears to hear and the eyes to see, we can draw the same teachings that Sri Rama gave, other teachers have given from all over nature. What is the tree telling us? The tree is teaching us an important virtue of forbearance. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Tarorepi Sahishnuna. Taru means a tree. Sahishnuta means forbearance. Whatever difficulty comes, adversity comes in life, we should face it with calmness, uncomplainingly, without complaining. That ability to forbear any adversity, any difficulty that comes in our way, in our life, with calmness, without complaining or lamenting, that ability, that virtue is a very important virtue for a devotee to have. Tree is teaching us all the time. Whatever you do to the tree, it not only does not complain, but it continues to provide whatever it has been providing all along. The tree provides many useful things. Even when the tree is killed, cut, it provides, its body serves as the timber to make furniture and build homes. Everything is trees for others, other to human beings and animals and other birds which make shelter, take shelter in the tree. All the food comes from plants. If you cut off one branch of a tree, it continues to give shade and fruits through the other remaining branches. Forbearance, the ability to forbear all difficulties that comes in our life, that's a very important virtue that the tree is telling us all the 24 hours. It is giving us the message. It is giving us oxygen required for our sustaining our life, taking our carbon dioxide. The best gift it can give, life support's gift it is giving. But we thoughtlessly kill the trees. Animals are doing us great. Without animal life, human life cannot exist on this planet. It's one big ecosystem. We kill animals, poachers are killing the animals, destroying, torturing animals. All these things. The moon, for example. The moon waxes and wanes. But does the moon really change its size? On new moon night, you don't see the moon at all. But is the moon absent from the sky? It is there. Like that, our mind wavers. Sometimes happy, sometimes unhappy, sometimes joyful, sometimes morose. But our self within, the self does not change. That we truly are, not the mind. That message the moon is giving. Like this, 24 non-human teachers are giving us the message, telling us the highest virtues that we can practice we ignore. We should tune ourselves to nature so that we can receive the same instruction from all of them. Study of the teaching. Teaching does not mean sitting down and studying the scriptures, memorizing scriptures without knowing the meaning or significance or without following the instructions. That is not study. Study means taking a couple of ideas from the vast array of ideas in the scriptures and putting them into practice diligently in our lives. That was the fourth instruction, a study of the teachings of the Lord. The fifth one, serving the teacher, seeing God in the teacher. A teacher is not necessarily one who teaches in a classroom situation. A child can be a teacher. A beggar can be a teacher. Nature can be our teacher. But we have to receive the teachings with humility and put the teachings into practice. Serving the teacher, seeing the presence of God. Actually, we should see the presence of God not only in the teacher, in every being across the whole of creation, including inanimate objects. Where is he not present? The Lord is omnipresent. We say that God is present everywhere, but we don't pay attention to his presence. We don't notice his presence anywhere. We have to become sensitive and develop our perception and make our vision incisive to see his presence in all the forms, piercing through the shell of misleading appearance. He can come in any form. He comes in all the forms. And what we see when we see a person or the outermost features of that person or anything, disregarding the presence of the divine, which is the core of that personality, which is the most important part in a person, is not the body or appearance or dress or what car he or she is driving, what language he or she is speaking, what food they eat, what job they do. Those are not the important things. The presence of God is the most important thing in any being, not only in human beings, animals and plants, in the whole of nature, in inanimate objects also. Seeing the presence of God everywhere, especially in teachers, because they show us the way for spiritual enlightenment. With gratitude, with love, seva. In the Gita, Sri Krishna says, when you approach a teacher, you have to do three things. We should do three things when you approach a teacher. There he says in the fourth chapter, tadvidhi, know that ultimate truth, that means the ultimate truth, or God. Know God through a teacher by doing three things. Pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Pranipata means when you see a holy person, a teacher need not be a formal professor in the university. There need be no such position. But anybody can be a teacher who can teach us something. We have to be receptive. And to that person, we have to show respect with humility. Pranipata means doing full prostration. What does full prostration mean? It means total surrender and humility. If I go to a teacher with a great pride and ego, let me see how much he knows what he can teach me, that is not the right attitude. That there will be no teaching learning possible. Or putting an obstruction. We should approach a teacher with humility, with love, with devotion. How do we indicate that? We indicate it in three different ways. Pranipatena. First thing is prostration. Second thing is pariprasnena. Pariprasna means asking questions, right questions, with humility. Sometimes people want to ask a question to show off how much they know or to test whether the teacher knows something or not. But we should ask a question with the true spirit of inquiry to know the truth. With humility, we should, sir, I don't know. Please clarify this doubt I have in my mind. Pariprasnina, seeking the truth with humility and devotion. Third thing we have to do when we see a teacher is sevaya, seva, some kind of personal service we have to render. How do we express our love to somebody? By doing some service. If somebody comes to your home, you offer a cup of tea and take that person's coat and put it in the coat rack. Why he can do it himself or herself? Why do we do that service? Expression of love. Service means telling that person, I'm so happy you have come to my home. I'm happy that you have come. I show my love by serving you in this humble way. Service means expression of love. They can themselves remove the coat and put it there, but you offer to do it. Why? Because you want to show respect and love. So serving the teacher, fifth instruction, seeing the presence of God in the teacher. The sixth one has three parts in it. First part was leading a virtuous life that we discussed in great detail. Doing virtuous life means doing good deeds that are conducive to purification of our mind and eliminating all bad actions which degrade us, take us down. This can be done in many different ways. Primarily, we thought about three things described in the Gita in the 18th chapter. Yajna dana tapas. Yajna means any unselfish activity. All activities should be ideally selfless. Unselfishness is God, takes us close to this. More unselfish we are, the closer we are to God. In the limiting case, if you are totally unselfish, we are at one with the divine. This is what Swamiji said in his lecture. Swami Vivekananda said, unselfishness is God. So doing yajna means doing all our activities without any selfish motive behind them. We do get the benefit anyhow, but our motivation should not be selfish. We do it out of love. Dana, charity, how to do charity, we have studied that in great detail. When we give 5 cents to a beggar, Swamiji says, Swami Vivekananda says, don't stand on a pedestal and say, hey, poor man, I am giving you money to help you. No, wrong attitude. The person who thinks he is giving the charity should be the one who should be grateful to the person who is there to receive the charity, because that person, by receiving our gift, whatever it is giving us an opportunity to ennoble ourselves, enrich ourselves spiritually. He's helping us to grow spiritually by being there to receive our service. Whether you give right to somebody, to the hospital or doctor's office, bring groceries to somebody who cannot go to grocery store, or help do their, provide a meal for the person who cannot cook, or do something big or small, that service should be rendered with humility and gratitude on the part of the person who provides the service. Not expecting the other person to thank me. I sent a gift, they didn't even send me a thank you card. Not that. I am thankful to the person for receiving my humble gift or service, whatever I could do. Thereby, that person has enabled me, is giving me an opportunity to enrich myself spiritually. I'm the one who should be grateful to the person who receives. So that is the spirit behind that. That is the one we have leading virtuous life. Yajna, dana, tapas, austerities, various kinds of austerities we studied. Now, second instruction in the sixth was practice of yama niyama. Last time we studied that one. Patanjali, in his Yoga Aphorisms, has given 8 steps, Ashtanga Yoga, 8 steps to culminating in samadhi. Union with the divine is samadhi, ultimate step in yoga. How does it start? First 2 steps are fundamental, basic steps. If you want to go up a staircase, you have to go step by step. You can't step all the steps and go to the top staircase, top of the stair at once. You have to go 1 step at a time. First 2 steps are the foundation. They are the basis for all spiritual practice, no matter which path we are following. Yama niyama, each of them has 5 subdivisions. We studied that last time. Now the sixth instruction has the third part in it, the last part in it. This is one we are going to study the remaining time today. Here it says, daily worship, nishtha matpujane nityam. We'll spend some time on the topic of worship. Sri Ramachandra says, daily you should worship God. Every day we should worship God.
Now,
when we hear the word worship, the picture that we conjure up in our minds is the worship we do on a special occasion, like we did Sri Ramakrishna worship last week. So we sit down there, all the worship materials are assembled, food offering, chanting of mantras and flowers and fruits and incense and lamp and all these things. That is one kind of worship. Traditionally, in our scriptures, teachers have identified four kinds of worship. Four kinds of worship. There are other kinds, but four primarily. Prathama Pratima Puja, Japastotra Adi Madhyama, Uttama Manasi Puja, Soham Puja Uttama Uttama. Four kinds of worship, four levels rather than four levels of worship. First is Pratima Puja. Pratima means a symbol, a representation of the divine. Divine is present everywhere in all forms, but we need to, it's helpful to have a particular symbol in which we invoke the presence of the divine and offer worship to that. Pratima Puja means ritualistic worship through a symbol, such as a photograph. We used to have a photograph in the earlier shrine. Now we have a statue of Sri Ramakrishna here. What does this statue do? It helps us to visualize his presence by creating a likeness of Sri Ramakrishna, whom we worship, either in the form of a photograph or in a painting or a statue. Can be made up of many things. Can be made of, this is made of marble. Statue can be made of metal, alloys, silver, gold, clay, whatever. So statue, that is a symbol. Ritualistic worship of God through a symbol such as a photograph, a statue, or a painting. When we do Ram Nam chanting here once a month, we keep a picture of Sri Rama accompanied by Sita Devi, Lakshmana, and Hanuman. We used to have a photograph. Now one devotee brought the images from India, so we keep the images. So what does that mean? We are invoking the presence of the Lord in that symbol, photograph, or image made of any material, and thereby that image or symbol is connecting us to the divine. It's a link connecting the worshipper and the worship. Second step of worship is Japastotra Adi Madhyama. Japa means repetition of God's name. It's a separate topic by itself. On many occasions we have talked about the importance of Japa. And Stotra means chanting the hymns in praise of the Lord, chanting the glories of God, Japastotra. And third step is Manasi Puja, Uttama Manasi Puja. Manasi Puja, Manas means mind. Manasi Puja means mental or internal worship. For this internal worship, you don't need any material. You don't need any samagri worship material. You don't have to be in any particular place. It doesn't have to be in a temple or a place of worship. It can be anywhere. You don't need even a picture. You are creating the whole scene of worship in your mind. He is present within us. He is present within us all. That's the basis of our Vedantic philosophy. Vedanta, all religions, faith generally agree that the Lord is present in all. There we do his worship. We create this scene in our hearts when we sit down for meditation, Manasi Puja, called Lila Dhyan, visualizing the glories, presence of God within us in the lotus of our heart. For that, you don't need any external paraphernalia. That can go on. That requires a higher degree of concentration than external worship. Here we have so many things to help us keep our mind on God. We chant the mantras. We offer various offerings like incense, lamb, food, etc. We chant hymns. That helps us to remain focused on God. But in mental worship, we don't have any external aid to help us, our minds remain, keep focusing on God. We have to do it by concentration. Fourth kind of ritualistic worship is, it's not really ritualistic in nature, Soham Pujottamottama. Soham. So far, there was a duality in our mind. I am the worshipper, and the Lord is there in my presence in the form of the picture or photograph or symbol, and I am worshipping. The separation is there. The worshipped and the worshipper, we maintain that separation. That is the usual paradigm for worship. But when a person does this worship and rises higher in spiritual awareness, the distance, the separation between me, the worshipper, and the Lord, the worship the Lord, becomes less and less. And eventually, merger takes place. I become merged in him, only he remains. The worshipper loses entirely his or her personality and merges entirely and becomes one with the divine, the worshipped. Only he remains. That complete merger, union with the divine, that is the highest kind of worship. Soham puj, soham, I am here, he is I. Uttamottama, highest of higher. Those are four kinds of worship. Ritualistic worship is very important in the beginning stages of our spiritual life. The rationale for worshipping God in images is not confined to any one particular image. He's everywhere. He's present everywhere, in the whole of nature, in the whole of creation, in every being. But we like to localize, visualize his presence in one particular image or photograph. It helps us. The rationale for doing this, worshipping God in an image, is it helps us to focus our attention in one place. Otherwise, if you worship God, how do you worship God everywhere? Worship, if you see his presence in everywhere, you can't worship. That's what happened to Sri Ramakrishna. He began his career as a paid priest in the Kali temple. His job was to do the worship every day. There was the image of Mother Kali. You see, many of you have been to Dakshineshwar. And he was the worshipper, he was the priest. All the things that we do here, he did more elaborate worship. He did chanting, singing, everything. A stage came, a time came, when he was able to tangibly see the presence of God everywhere, in everything, at all times. Even in the flower garden. He used to go to the flower garden to pick the flowers for worship. Whom do you worship? Where do you worship it? What do you worship? He's everywhere. He's present in the water pot. He's present in the marble floor. He's present in the images worshipping. God is present in the building, in the person standing outside. Everywhere, where do you worship him? Where do you offer worship? And in the worshipper also he is present. When that stage of total communion with the divine is reached, when you see tangibly the presence of God everywhere in everything, then all worship ceases. Could not worship, could not cut a fruit, could not cut a flower. So all worship ceases. You are at one with him. That is the highest kind of worship. Where does it start? From ritualistic worship. It starts from the duality, position of duality. I am separate, God is separate. I am worshipping God. We start with the starting position, but as devotion deepens, becomes deeper and purer, then separation between me and the worshipped, my ideal, becomes less and less. And only he remains, I merge in him. Then all worship ceases. That is why, where does the whole process start? With dualistic worship. So ritualistic worship is important. All teachers have emphasized the importance of ritualistic worship. In his second meeting with Sri Ramakrishna, M, the author of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, Mahendranath Gupta, he had a question. See, Sri Ramakrishna was assessing, testing M's understanding, knowledge, and his readiness to undertake the mission of his life, which was to record and propagate Sri Ramakrishna's teaching. Sri Ramakrishna knew that one. M gradually came to know. At that time, he didn't have the notion that he's going to record and his gospel will be read all over the world in many languages. M didn't have any idea. Sri Ramakrishna knew this person has come here to do that. Fulfill that mission. So he is preparing him. He is preparing M's mind to undertake the task of recording Sri Ramakrishna's instructions, understanding, recording, and propagating. So he tested him. So he asked some questions. Sri Ramakrishna asked, one of the questions he asked was, do you believe in God with form or without form? M. Mahendranath Gupta, he was brought up in with a little Brahma Samaj background, where devotees believe in the formless aspect of God. They don't believe in God with form. You can't confine God to a particular form. There's limiting God. God is formless. That was the background that he came from. So Sri Ramakrishna says, it is okay to have faith in the formless aspect of God, but don't for a moment think that that's the only truth. God can exist in any form, in all the forms, and without any form. You can't limit him to any one aspect. When M heard that, he had a question in his mind. How is it possible to worship God in an image? How can we confine God to an image or a statue or a picture? God is infinite, omnipresent. So M asked the question, sir, suppose one believes in God with form. Certainly he is not the clay image. We worship images made of clay. In Durga Puja, images are made of clay. In Ganesha Chaturthi, Ganesha images are made of clay. And after worshipping, we take the image and immerse it in the river or lake. Then God is not in the image. Certainly he is not the clay image. Sri Ramakrishna interrupting him. But why clay? It is an image of spirit. Chinmaya Murti. Consciousness is pulsating everywhere. In every atom of the universe. Where is he not present? Omnipresent means present everywhere. There is no place where he is not. His presence is not. Where he is absent from. He is present everywhere. M could not understand the significance of this image of spirit. M said, sir, one should explain to those who worship the clay image that it is not God, the clay image is not God, and that while worshipping it, they should have God in view and not the clay image. One should not worship clay. This was M's argument. He was still raw. He had to learn a few things, and Sri Ramakrishna gave a few strokes. Just like an expert sculptor, an artist to make sculptures like this one, how does he start? He starts with a rock, a big rock, granite sculpture. We see in Hindu temples, we see sculptures of divinity made of granite. Where do they start? A big, shapeless, huge rock is there. Every rock you see is not suitable for making a sculpture from. It has to have a certain quality. The sculptor knows which rock has potential of being made into a beautiful sculpture. So he chose as that one. Many people used to go to Sri Ramakrishna, but he chose M because in M he saw he's the potential. He is the one who can do this task. He chose him. Now it's a shapeless big rock. In that big rock is hidden a beautiful image, sculpture. How to bring it out? First of all, you have to remove all the unnecessary parts. How is it done? A big chisel is taken, a big hammer is taken, a few big strong blows are given to chip away all the unnecessary parts, which are not necessary for the resulting beautiful sculpture. When that big outline is created, then he takes a small chisel, small hammer, and thousands of small strokes to refine, finally give it the shape. This is exactly what Sri Ramakrishna did to M. In M he saw the raw material, rock, suitable for making a sculpture. Then, with the four or five big strokes, somewhat painful to the ego of M, he removed the unnecessary parts, and then over the next 4.5 years, every time he saw M, he made small refinements and explanations and corroborations and illustrations, small refinements, made it into beautiful sculpture. That's why we have the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna today. Expert sculptor Sri Ramakrishna was. He knew. That is what happening. So he says, One blow that he gave was sharply, Sri Ramakrishna interrupts M sharply, that is the one hobby of you Calcutta people, giving lectures and bringing others to the light. Nobody ever stops to consider how to get the light himself. Who are you to teach others? Calcutta people, we are all in a sense Calcutta people only, because we don't know anything, you are trying to teach other people. In that sense, we have that same problem. He rebukes him. What did that make? Why did he rebuke Sri Ram? M, why did Sri Ram? Because M's mind had to be prepared. It's painful. It's painful, but it is beneficial. Let's taking medicine. Medicine, injection or whatever, surgical procedure, is painful. But why it is administered? Because to help the patient feel better, become better. That's what Sri Ramakrishna did. In the matter of worship, 3 points have to be noted from that conversation between Sri Ramakrishna and M in that second meeting. First thing is, the worshipper can choose any aspect or form of God for worship. A formless aspect of God or God with form, with any form, is your choice. God, all forms are his forms only. He manifests through all the forms, ugly, some pleasant, some not so pleasant. But he is present everywhere. He's not selective in his presence. He's present everywhere, unconditionally. There's one message which comes again and again in our scriptures. Then second point we have to note is, the worshipper should be convinced that God, the ultimate reality, is being worshipped through this image, through this representation, through this symbol. The third thing that is important to know, most important thing in worship, any kind of worship, what is the one most important element? Not the mantras, not the scriptures, not the materials. No, they are secondary. What is the one most important element in any worship? Devotion. Devotion. If the devotion is absent, we may have all the elaborate equipment, materials, long worship, but if devotion is not there, it just becomes a show, an ostentation. See how, what an elaborate worship I'm doing, how many people I invited, how many offerings I'm making. That is not devotion. Devotion is the key element in the process of worship. Devotion is the most important part of the worship, not the offerings, not the mantras, or the technical procedure. How Swami Vivekananda used to do the worship, you know. There's a book called For Seekers of God. Many of you know that one. It's For Seekers of God contains the teachings of Swami Shivananda Maharaj, Mahapurush Maharaj. There, Swami Shivananda Mahapurush Maharaj describes how Swami Vivekananda used to do the worship. We all do the worship. We have a mantra book, which tells us the mantras, we chant the mantras, we do the offerings, everything, we go through the procedure. But Swamiji did nothing of that sort. He used to go to the temple to worship Sri Ramakrishna, sit down, and for a long time he would meditate, on Sri Ramakrishna. Instead of doing all the ritualistic procedures, he would meditate for a long time on Sri Ramakrishna. And if after long meditation, you would take a few handfuls of flowers, and with a prayer, he would offer it to the feet of Sri Ramakrishna. And then that was his worship. He would get up and go away. He would not do the food offering. Other monks used to come and complete the worship by offering the food and completing the remaining parts of the worship. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says that no matter what kind of worship we do, meditation, worship, or repetition of God's name, or what kind of spiritual practice we do, the one most important element is devotion, our pure love for God. If the devotion is absent, other things don't matter. Devotion must be there. There is in the 9th chapter of the Gita, Sri Krishna says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti pahritam ashnami prayatatmanaha bhaktya upahritam with devotion, if you offer even a simple thing to the Lord, need not be very elaborate. A fruit, a flower, even a spoonful of water. If you offer that simple, humble thing to the Lord, but with deep devotion in our heart, that you will accept with great joy. Ashtanami, you will accept that one. Otherwise, without devotion, elaborate all the mantras and chantings and lights and music and all those things. What is he interested in? What is he interested in? What does God look for in our worship? He looks for devotion in our heart. He looks into our heart, not what the material we have, not the elaborate worship arrangements we have. If I have devotion, he is happy. He will accept it. Bhavagrahi janardhanaha. There's a saying in Sanskrit. The Lord is only interested in one thing in me. He doesn't care about my fruits and flowers and almonds and raisins. He wants devotion from me. If I have devotion in it, that he will accept happily, gladly. We have to offer devotion with devotion. That is the ritually importance of ritualistic worship. It helps us to cultivate devotion, to deepen our devotion, to purify our devotion. There are two other ways to worship God. Both are very important. This is one, ritualistic worship. Briefly, we have described different kinds of ritualistic worship. What is the most important element in ritualistic worship, etc. We talked about so far. But there are two other ways of to worship God. One comes in the Bhagavatam, which was later elaborated in great detail in the modern context by Swami Vivekananda. That is a very important topic that we will not have time to discuss it today. We'll discuss it when we meet next time. There are two other things besides ritualistic worship, two other ways of worshiping God. One is worship of God in man. Man means human beings. Bhagavatam says, Swamiji also later elaborated, if you go to the temple, offer very elaborate worship, spend a lot of money and show music and dance and sound and everything, light. But if you neglect the people around you or ill-treat them, then where is worship? That's not worship at all. Swamiji said, I'm going to read a little portion, paragraphs from Swamiji's writings in one of his lectures. Then we'll study this in detail, how it comes in the Bhagavatam, and Swamiji captured that idea from the Bhagavatam and elaborated it and presented it to suit the modern context. Swamiji writes in his lecture, says in his lecture, this is the gist of all worship. I'm quoting. This is the gist of all worship. To be pure and to do good to others. He who sees Shiva in the poor, in the weak, and in the deceased really worships Shiva. And if he sees Shiva only in the image, his worship is but preliminary. He who has served and helped one poor man, seeing Shiva in that poor man, without thinking of his caste or creed or race or anything, with him Shiva is more pleased than with a man who sees him only in the temples and images. If we don't see the presence of God in the beings around us, in the people around us, animals, in plants, in things, in the trees, and if you see only the presence of God in the image, in the temples, then we are not seeing anything. Our worship, our devotion is very preliminary, rudimentary type. Pure devotion, mature devotion means seeing the presence of God in all the beings in our life, that come into our lives in any way, serving them, seeing the presence of God in them. That kind of worship is the highest kind of worship. Swamiji elaborated on it. It comes in the Bhagavatam. We will study that aspect next time. So ritualistic worship, service as worship. There's one more kind of worship which we have to study. That maybe next time, God willing, any work that we do, barring work that we should not do. We should not be doing bad things, immoral, illegal things, pratishiddha karma. We should not say, we should not tell lies and cheat and steal and say, I'm worshipping God. Barring those things, any other activity, secular or spiritual, regardless, must be done as worship. Since we're always doing something at home or in the workplace, you are doing something. Since you are always doing something, if you convert all of your actions into worship, then you are always worshiping God. Our whole life becomes an unbroken stream of worship. Then are we not worshiping God? We make a distinction. When I go to the shrine, sit down there, offer fruits and flowers, chant mantra, I am worshiping. When I'm doing breakfast in the kitchen or talking to somebody or speaking, this is not worship. This is worship. Every activity I do, whether somebody else is involved in it or not, is my worship because he's present everywhere. Shankaracharya nicely summed up this one in his hymn. We'll study that, all the whole hymn next time. But this time I'll conclude with one sentence. Shankaracharya says, addressing the Lord, Yajyat karma karomi tattadakhilam shambho tavaradhanam. O Lord, whatever work I do is my worship. That's my worship of you. Great sages have done this one. And next time, we will also study how Brother Lawrence practiced this. Brother Lawrence, a 17th century French Carmelite monk, he didn't have access to Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavatam, but ideas are not limited to any one place or time. Ideas are universal. He practiced this one discipline in his whole life. Only one discipline he did. He didn't have time to go to the chapel and participate in the offices like other monks were doing in the monastery. He was working in the monastery kitchen, cooking, cleaning, serving. That it is a worship and fantastic devotion he displayed. Every act that we do, if done with worship, purity becomes worship. And since we are always doing something, we are always worshipping God. That is the highest level of worship. Next time when opportunity comes, by the grace of God, we'll pursue this topic of worship. And now we shall close with a closing prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Makaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om. May all be happy. May all be free from suffering. May all realize what is noble and auspicious. May no one be subject to misery. Om peace. Peace be within us all. Peace and harmony be amongst all beings. And peace be everywhere in nature by the grace of God. Hari Om Tat Sat Sarvam Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.